listening to Pawnee Public Radio.
With your hosts, Hannah and Will. If you like kisses and stunts, then you're in the right place, because this episode is a doozy. Hey, it's me, Will.
How's and that? It's me, Hannah. I just did a stunt. You couldn't see, though, but it was awesome.
Yeah, honestly, just getting by these days, that's a stunt. You know? The risk is high. Take care, wear a helmet.
This is the finale episode of season 2. We did it.
I can't believe it.
We're in season 2, episode 24. It's Freddy Spaghetti, but we did it. We got to the end of season 2, and we're throwing a party, and you're all invited.
Yeah, well, you're here, so it's a surprise party for us, in a way, too. I forgot that season 1 was a shorty, and season 2 was what we call a regular.
That's an official TV term.
Yeah, we try to use our expertise on this show. So in a way, we've done two seasons, but if we use the season one as a unit, we've also kind of done, what, like four season ones, right?
Not only was season one a shorty and season two, I'd even call it a longie. That's another official TV term. But season one ended in a rock show, and season two is ending in
a children's parody album concert with Freddy Spaghetti. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that what you were fishing for?
Rock, a spaghetti show. This episode features the musical comedy stylings of Pawnee superstar Freddy Spaghetti. So we got our own musical comedy superstar, my friend Alex Lewis. He's a part of the comedy trio Lou Burger.
Yeah, and they have Lou Burger live at Lincoln Hall in Chicago, which is going to be available anywhere and everywhere you can imagine, February 9th and beyond. Alex,
please welcome Alex Lewis.
Hello.
To the pod.
Hello, Parks and
Thank you
Rec
so Rec. Much for coming on.
Of course. That was such a wonderful, storied introduction, you guys. I mean, and really just right off the cuff. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, we got it in one try.
It was great.
You do have, it's a really
and
alliterative.
There's no way to prove differently.
Very like alliterative title about this show at Lincoln Hall, which I love. Have you ever been to Lincoln Hall in Chicago?
Me?
Yeah. It's a real place.
We filmed a special there.
That all makes sense. What did you film it during the pandemic? Like, was it empty audience? It was before. Okay.
It was about 2 months before.
I thought it was going to be maybe one of those things where you like, it was screened there live. I guess if I thought more about what a live event there would look like now, I imagine like an empty theater with just a screen. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair.
That's so awesome.
The Rockettes, when they're live at Rockefeller Center, they go to Rockefeller Center.
God.
Yeah, I've just forgotten what a live performance.
It's okay.
Entails.
The world doesn't That's exist. Reasonable. I feel like we should cut you a lot of slack. But Alex, we're so happy to have you on for the musical comedy episode.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Now, before we get into it, I want to know what your relationship to Parks and Rec is, but also how you would rate Freddy Spaghetti and if he would be allowed to join Lou Burger.
Okay. Do you want me to rate Freddy Spaghetti first and say whether or not he'd be able to join Lou Burger?
You could do that in either order.
All right.
It's an open-ended order.
Just to sort of close out, it's a good transition from musical comedy, which we were just talking about. I loved Freddy Spaghetti, quite honestly. I thought it was really funny. I loved how all of his gags are just songs that you know, but he's adding
Linguini.
Different noodles. And then, that's right. At one point, so most of his songs are just a famous song, like Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny, Yellow Polka Dot Bikini. But instead of Bikini, he does Linguini, and he had a couple songs like that. But then his big finish was just singing noodles and having people repeat those noodles to him. So I love Freddy Spaghetti, and what you see is what you get with him. I'd let him in Lou Burger. I'd probably have to talk to my bandmates, But
I don't think you would have to talk to bandmates. I think you would just be okay. Like, hey, Freddy Spaghetti's joining, and they would just be like, yeah, we're psyched.
I feel like we'd have to change up our material a lot to sort of meet the standards of his lyric.
Well, you'd have to meet, you know, halfway, you know, between Spaghetti and, you know.
I think it's like the Beatles where you can be like, oh, that's like Ringo wrote that one. I think there would be somewhere it's like, oh, that's a Spaghetti
one.
Yeah,
that's clearly a Freddy one. Yeah. When suddenly all they're doing is going, Linguini, Linguini.
Although, to be fair, are we allowed to, what's the swearing policy on this podcast? I should have asked this before.
We have a limited number, but we have a couple.
Yeah, right, you can take mine. I don't really use mine.
Okay.
I use mine a lot. Don't take mine.
Lou Burger actually does have a song. We have two songs about food. One's called Things Got Silly Eating Chili at a Gay Bar. And one is called A Sausage is a Roasted Dick. And I feel like he could probably contribute some good lyrics to both of those songs.
So you don't feel like the songs are done yet, right? Like they're still, it's a living, breathing thing. If Freddy Spaghetti came into the band, he would probably get his own verse.
I think if Freddy Spaghetti came into Lou Burger, we would sort of go, look, here's our songs. We want, you know, we want your input. You're in Lou Burger now. You're in the band. We need to. Yeah.
All my jokes were too. All the jokes running through my head were too dirty because you said a sausage is a roasted dick. And I was thinking what different spaghettis were.
Yeah. There's some great.
Yeah. Maybe they're all wieners. Yeah.
Pasta really opens itself up to, you know, a lot of different shapes. I mean, a penne could potentially, I mean, maybe not.
So, Parks and Rec. Have you seen it?
Right. My relationship to Parks and Rec is, I love Parks and Rec, and I used to watch it, like, to go to bed every night. I'm a big, big fan. I think that a lot of people sort of look at The Office like, you know, this is Greg Daniels' masterpiece and, you know, Michael Schur's masterpiece. But I feel like in the grand scheme of, like, the material within both shows, I think Parks and Rec
is a lot
funnier.
You think The Good Place? Oh.
Oh, I haven't watched The Good Place, to be fair.
What?
Yeah. I know part of the twist, but
But the twist, it doesn't even matter. It's not, it's just pure... You know what? Another time I'll pitch you on The Good Place. I was making a joke about what you were going to say was going to be The Good Place, but I do think maybe they're all masterpieces.
No, I mean, I love...
Maybe they're just brilliant writers.
And I love The Office, and I'm sure that I would really like The Good Place. Like, that, I love Ted Danson, I love Kristen Bell. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But, I think Parks and...
But so you would watch it to go to bed every night.
I'd watch it to go to bed every night. And then for some reason, and it's still to this case to this day, I have not seen the final season.
We'll have to have you back.
Wow. Yeah. So my mom didn't see the final season for a while, but she didn't know it existed because at the time it was like on Hulu or something instead of Netflix. So she was like, Hannah, what is this, like, season seven, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should know.
It's almost like we're not a Parks and Rec podcast. So wait, why have you not seen the final season? Because it's a good final season.
I've heard it's amazing. I just haven't gotten around to it. That is the only. I just haven't watched it. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a busy year. We're all going out. We're out and about. There's no time to watch.
No, I have to watch TV. First of all, I've been watching Money Heist recently, which, have you guys seen Money Heist?
No.
Oh, man, it's really good. We don't
I
have
love
to talk
heists. I love it, a good heist.
I love money.
Well, it's a then you're going to love Money Heist. It's a television series on Netflix in Spanish that I love. It's got subtitles. Really good. You should go check it out. I'm done pitching Money Heist. But go check it out.
Done pitching the final season of Parks and Rec.
I want to. I'm going to watch. I am going.
Okay. We didn't watch the final season, though. We did watch the final episode of season two. This is the last one. It's the big, it's the goodbye to Mark Brandanowitz.
Uh-huh.
It's the hello to sort of a real pivot in the show and in a new direction.
You, and I gotta say, you know, because we watched the episode together, It was very fun to watch you absolutely just tear down Mark Brandanowitz over and over again.
I wasn't that mean. I just really didn't. I feel like I was actually harsher about a different moment with one of my favorite characters, Ben. We're going to get to that. I feel like my harshest critique was not about a Mark moment, except I guess I just like, we'll get into it, but they do this sort of emotional goodbye to Mark, and then they completely ignore it the rest of the series. There's this last moment, and we'll start from the beginning of the episode, but there is a goodbye to Mark, but none of the things, the sort of going away presence he leaves her, are ever acknowledged again. In fact, there's a whole episode negating it. So I guess it's just hard for me to buy in. I've had trouble buying into like the emotional Mark Brandanowitz, but should we just jump into it? You know, should we live in Freddy Spaghetti?
Let's do it.
Pour ourselves a big fresh bowl of Freddy Spaghetti and eat up unlimited.
Should we eat
unlimited spaghetti?
Should we even A and B? I mean, it's sort of all one connected story, but I would say the A story is with the government shut down, Leslie and her crew tries to sort of put together this children's concert.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is that the B story is the April, Andy, and love triangle. And maybe the C story is Mark Brandanowitz. But speak now and forever hold your peace. Or forever hold your peace. Excuse me. Not and forever hold your peace.
I'll speak also, up and then I'll hold it. Yeah. What do you think, Alex? You
I was going to say there's also even a second C story with what's his face and what's her face?
Tom and Lucy. Dare we say D?
Maybe a D story.
It's literally the D story.
Yeah. Okay. It is literally the D.
I feel like Tom would appreciate that joke.
Well, that's fair. I do think. I mean, it's a sign of like a good finale where a lot of people who kind of had, you know, loose ends are either maybe we think they're going to be tied up, and then it at the last minute you got to have a loose untied. You got to have a loose end because that's drama. That's storytelling.
Oh,
I mean, I oh, Alex.
I was going to say, there's almost even an E story, too, because there's, what's his face and what's her face?
Alex, I'm going to give you a note already on the pod and say, I need more specificity. I guess what we could do is we could say the A story is the Freddy Spaghetti concert. The B story is the various love stories all wrapping up.
There you go.
And the C story is Mark leaving. And the D story is what's his face and what's her face. Just kidding. let's jump into it, though. We've got Freddy Spaghetti. We've got a closed government. And the only person there is Ron sitting alone at the table. And Andy, who doesn't realize why everyone's gone.
Yeah.
It's a great opener.
I love the idea that Ron Swanson is just sitting there enjoying the government being there.
Yeah. We talked last episode that like every new piece of information broke Leslie's heart and overjoyed him. It's like we're watching two characters we love have extremely opposite reactions to the situation.
Yeah.
It does say a lot about his character that he's just still soaking it all in. You know, it's kind of like, finally, this is just a building. Like the spirit of democracy no longer pumps through these halls.
Is this his dream job? Like, because he always talks about wanting to gut it from the inside. Is this his scenario where his only job is to sit at a table whittling alone?
I feel like that's what he does. I don't feel like he's doing anything different in the scene, except he's smiling. You know, he's like, he's still doing nothing, which is what he does every day.
It's also, it's also the first stunt of the episode with Andy roller skating over the barrier. And just absolutely taking a wonderful, you know, dive. And I think that Chris Pratt might have done that himself.
Yeah. We call that a Pratt fall. I think that's that's like a patented Pratt fall.
Okay.
But bum.
I feel like in the Freddy Spaghetti episode, I can be a little loosey-goosey with my puns, you know?
Lucy doesn't come Andy until like the second act.
Oh,
yeah,
right,
Lucy's not here
just
yet.
Goosey.
Bam, bam. You guys are firing on all cylinders.
Much like the motorcycle Which Andy buys.
That Andy got. I love when he says it's the highest interest rate you can get, thinking it's a good thing. It reminds me of why, with the stock market going crazy, I don't try to pretend like I know what's going on, because I feel like I would sound like Andy in this scene by accident.
Yeah.
Andy really does remind me of, like, Homer Simpson or something. He's just, like, I'm sure you guys talk about Andy all the time, because he's one of the stars of the show, but he just is so lovable.
Don't worry about what we've talked about before, Alex. Just live in the now. Talk about who you want to talk about.
All
don't
I've been
be
thinking about. No,
limited.
I just love how big of a goof he is. I wish TV had more characters like Andy, because he just...
Is he your favorite character on the show?
I don't know. I'll have to think about that. But
okay.
I don't want to leave anyone out in case he's not. But I love, I'm a big fan of, like, him, a Homer Simpson, who else is kind of just an idiot. Like, but you like them. They're a friendly Dumbo, and they're fun to watch, and when they can also pull off physical comedy, I mean, it really gets me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think too of Andy's character as like kind of a quintessential clown. not in scary or creepy clown, but just in someone who is like just playing the fool, but also has this emotional heart, which also I think lets him speak emotional truth sometime in a way that in the middle of being goofy.
I've always said I just think of him as a puppy dog.
Yeah, and but like I think it's like hard to pull that off too, because it's like hard to just pull that stupid, like that genuinely stupid.
But I don't think of him as like stupid. I just think of him as like so sincere to a fault, so that he genuinely, if a salesperson tells him like this is good, you have the highest interest rate ever. He's like, that's awesome. I know that can come off as stupid. I just think of him like a puppy. Like he picks up on things that other characters don't pick up on sometimes. He's intelligent in his own way, but he's a puppy dog. He's going to jump over the
Hannah, you've got puppy dog on the brain right now is what it is. Like everything's a puppy dog to you.
No, I've been saying Andy's a puppy dog before I've had a puppy dog. And now that I have a puppy dog, I'm like, Andy, what are you doing in my house?
That's fair.
But it's a good opener. It sets the stage for the situation. Andy has a motorcycle, the government shut down, and then we go right into a city forum.
Mm. Which we love.
A town hall, which we love. And we have Leslie and Ron, again, opposite ends of the emotional spectrum.
Yeah. We get to see some of our favorite new extras. I think Parks and Rec has the best featured extras in the game, complaining about the parks being closed. Who's going to stop Al-Qaeda? What am I supposed to do with my kids? Yeah.
I remember watching that and thinking about even like the non-speaking extras were giving it their all. Like there's just, I remember somewhere sort of towards the back, there was a woman in the crowd just kind of like going, I was like, yeah, that's right. Okay, you've sold me on this world.
Now, woman in the crowd, if you're listening, if you were the silent woman in the crowd, please come on the podcast. Alex is a huge fan.
Come on again. She's here right now. I mean, she's here with us. She's just, again, not going to say anything for the duration of this episode either. Just sitting quietly in her own little Zoom box.
Yeah.
So, long story short, the parks they're closed. They're straight up closed, and worst of all, Freddy Spaghetti is canceled.
The children's concert.
Yeah. To put things into perspective, Alex, how does it feel to have a concert be canceled? From your perspective.
Well, I've had, over the past year, several concerts canceled. And, you know, for anyone listening, that's because it was just 2020, and the coronavirus ravaged all of them. Yeah. And
if you're listening to this podcast, like, 30 years from now...
Well, or if you just haven't been paying attention now.
Sure.
Someone is like, what's going on?
But having a concert canceled, especially the same day, get out of here. You better still pay me.
Have you ever played like an outdoor park show, like the thing that Freddy Spaghetti does? Are you, how kid friendly are you on a scale from like the Wiggles to sausage, Tenacious D?
On a scale from sausage dick to pickle hair.
I'm gonna say on a scale of sausage dick to being if sausage no, dick wait. Is a 10 and pickle hair is a 1 on like inappropriateness, in general, we're probably about a 6.7.
Well, all right. I think that's my whole thing, actually.
To quote Freddie Spaghetti, well, he didn't say this, but to in the vein of Freddie Spaghetti, we get a little saucy.
That's not a quote. That's just something you said.
No, I made that up.
Yeah, in the vein. I think we can do that. Yeah, inspired by it. It's fan fiction.
Well, because, in the noodle vein.
And don't forget that Ron Swanson had that great zinger. You've got Freddie Spaghetti's sauce on your hand.
You mean his sauce.
Yeah, that was great.
No, well, because Leslie says, you've got Freddie Spaghetti's blood on your hands. And he goes, don't you mean his sauce? And then Leslie tries to take it later, but goes too far.
Yeah. And then we have one of my favorite, just like asides, which is Ron burning his tongue, which I'm going to call it now is maybe one of my favorite parts of the episode is him burning his tongue just happily, not without a care in the world.
You know, the beginning of this episode, I'd say the first kind of third, it's a little chaotic because usually we have the Parks office to ground them and where everyone is like hanging out or like, but we can't because the government shut down. So we sort of have like Chris running to ask Anne out in the hospital. We have Leslie going to Tom's house. Like we have people all over the place. But I think the big scene in the beginning, other than the government shutdown, is that Leslie goes into Mark's office saying, what should we do? You always know, which is weird because he hasn't really known for a while. And he tells her he's leaving to go to the private sector. Dun.
Do we ever see Mark Brandanowitz again after this episode?
No. And not only do we not see him, he's never mentioned, like, I'm just gonna, okay, spoiler alert. If you have not watched past this point in Parks and Recreation, go stick some noodles in your ear while I say this about Mark Brandanowitz. But there are two instances that really stick out in my mind about how they ignore Mark Brandanowitz. The first is at the end of this episode, he leaves Leslie a kind of a design for the future park. There is an entire episode in a future season built around who is going to design this park. Mark's design, actually three main points. Mark's design, never mentioned. There is another future episode in which Anne kind of says she becomes the personalities of each of her boyfriends. So she has boxes which with each of her boyfriends. Andy, spoiler alert, Chris, like, you know, spoiler alert, Tom. And there's no Mark box. I feel like that would have been the easiest thing. And he's never brought back, ever. I feel like something happened with this actor, because I think it would have been very clever and funny in, like, even the last season, Alex, that you haven't watched, to have one Mark Brandanowitz joke, for him to drive past, for something. I just feel like it's so weird to me that you have to sort of ignore, you have to kind of show canon it, because it yeah.
I remember.
Unstick the noodles in your ears. We're back.
Well, I was going to say, keep them in for just one more minute. I remember watching, because I did watch the whole thing up until that last season. And I remember, like, it's such an unceremonious way for him to leave that it's almost like I almost thought he was going to come back in the next season, just in a different, like,
so job initially they were going to have him come back. He was going to represent someone who went in and out of government from the private sector. I think the initial plan was to have him come in and out. And I don't know what happened. Something with the actor maybe not being happy there, or the writers, or something happened that they didn't want to continue bringing him back. Maybe the show just moved on, but he was supposed to sort of weave in and out. I don't know. But I did think he did have a funny line in the scene where Leslie goes and he's decided to quit, where he said he wanted a sign that he should leave. And then Anne broke up with him the week he was going to propose. The government shut down, and then a pigeon pooped on him, shit on him inside. And I thought that was sort of like a funny, like, Eeyore type wah-wah.
It was. That was a good moment.
I think he's funniest as sort of like a very sad.
I feel like we've seen so much of season two is like characters thinking about, you know, their progression from the first season and how much they changed and like reinvented and reimagined about the show. It's kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of a nice reminder too, that sometimes if a character isn't working, you can like just get rid of, you know, like I think it's, you know, we're pretty hard on Mark, but I'm also glad that like it's nice that we now have episodes without him. And I think the writers like really did try to like do well by him. Like, even if we don't feel like it totally emotionally hit, it was like, you know, it could have been a fiery car accident. It could have been a cliff diving accident. It could have been like,
it really could have gone to like Shonda Rhimes type ending. No, I think they really tried to give him, they had, you know, the penultimate scene, which we'll get to, is the Mark Brandanowitz goodbye scene. And they really sit in it and, you know, have a moment. But it is interesting. Like, this is his last episode and the Parks Department does one last hurrah where they try to put on the Freddy Spaghetti concert and he is not in it. I don't know. They're just... Still, I guess I didn't feel like I was that hard on him, but there are still moments that don't work even in this final episode where like Leslie gets mad and knocks all his papers to the floor. And again, he just doesn't really react.
Yeah.
I don't know. At least not like with any sort of, you know, if he reacted big or was nice in return, something. He just... I don't know. This character that was really supposed to be the sort of look into the camera of Leslie's craziness has really, I don't know. Maybe it was the Anne relationship that wore him down. I don't really know. He's just sort of a shell of a person.
Well, I think he does he plays a character who like does what I think I've been as hard on Mark as the next person, but I also feel like he is a reasonable character. Like he often does like, normal or kind of like unexciting or boring choices as a character, and part of me really relates to that because I see myself in that where I'm like, oh, I often choose the boring thing.
No, but see, I don't see you in this at all because I think the thing, it's not a grounded person because I like, you know, you're a really grounded, lovely human.
Okay,
but you're not. But here's what you're anymore. Not. No, here's what you're not that Mark Brandanowitz is. And the biggest thing that didn't work for him, he's apathetic. His whole deal is that he's apathetic about the work they're all passionate about. And even though you could argue, oh, well, April doesn't like love the work, but April is passionate about things, about Andy, you know, for instance. And apathetic doesn't work in a TV character because there's no motive at all, I feel like.
Yeah.
I don't know, Alex, you're the guest. What do you think?
I was going to say, I think part of it has also got to be Ben Wyatt, right? Because Ben Wyatt is sort of this character who also is very dry. He cares more about like what he's doing and everything, but he's definitely a dry, you know, character. And I think he's also, though dry, more compelling to watch. And
because he's not apathetic. He's very much like we saw in his first episode, last episode, he took Leslie out for a beer and said, the reason I'm doing these budget cuts, the reason I'm a Debbie Downer is because I ran for office at 18, failed, and I want to prove myself again. Like there's purpose there.
Yeah, but
like there's a motivation under his persona.
Yes.
And dry, I love. I'm not against dry. I'm against apathetic
but
characters.
But I think that his character does also, like, sort of come in and take a bit of that steam away from him because they're both sort of these dry characters, but Ben is just a much better crafted character, and you sort of go, well, what do I need this guy for? Let's just give me this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the other thing that we've struggled with, Alex, is, you know, Leslie goes into Mark's office saying, you always know what to do. You know, I think it's also for me, it's her like adoration and love for Mark is hard when we're being told it, but we're not being shown it. And right. We haven't been for a while. And like, yes, we see him be a sounding board sometimes, But Leslie is so much more capable than this man who she's constantly turning to. And I think as a viewer, that can be confusing.
Yeah, it does feel a little like they took the dynamic of Michael Scott and Jim Halpern and just gave it to Leslie and Mark Brandanowicz.
But this is a different show now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like I think when people talk about writing, I feel like there's this common thread a lot of times of people saying, you know, a character sort of revealing itself to you, or an idea that feels like it's coming from some other place than yourself, and you're sort of following that inspiration. And I think the thing you pointed out, Hannah, of, you know, Leslie coming in and naming Mark as something feels like it felt like a good idea to have Mark play this type of character in the world. But as the show like came alive, he didn't grow into that, or that didn't evolve in the way that the other characters did. But it's, yeah. So this is a goodbye from us to Mark, but not yet.
This is a goodbye.
Not yet.
But yeah, not yet. We really got stuck in his first scene.
It's easy to happen. Yeah. Moving is hard.
But, you know, Chris is asking Anne out again in the hospital. Like I said, it's sort of all over. Lucy is dating Tom now, and Leslie goes to him for help.
And everybody's using the bathroom in Anne's house.
Everybody. But, I mean, there's basically two main things going on. We've got Leslie decides to put on the Freddy Spaghetti concert by herself because Ben and Chris won't keep it alive.
Yeah.
Right. And then we've got the big budget cut meeting happening simultaneously.
Oh, man. The way Rob Lowe also, like, expertly act when people ask him for things, he's like, yes, absolutely. And then Ben comes in and he's like, no, you can't have that. And then just like, ooh, God, I wish we could have that. Like, just his reactions are so priceless.
And it does. It also feels like earnest positivity. Like, I think it works because every time he wants to believe that it will, that, like, this time they can make it work. And I agree. That's such a fun game that they play.
Yeah. It's really funny.
It's a fun dynamic in those budget meetings, too, of just Ron. I mean, Ron is having a great day. He gets the whole building to himself. He's got his little slash it flags. Yeah, I love, like, a giddy Nick Offerman is just a delight to behold. Like, more, anytime he plays giddy, I think it's just such a treat.
He's great. It's always fun to run into him on other shows. Like, he's in Deadwood for a couple episodes, and I think he's naked in Deadwood, and it was very disorienting. But also, I was just like, wow, here's Nick Offerman doing his thing.
Yeah,
I just love, I love that Leslie's co-workers being there for her is proven in this episode. You know, she decides she's going to put on the concert by herself without any support from the government, and everyone shows up to Jerry's house. April's there. Jerry shows up and she's so excited, but then April shows up, and Donna and Tom. And I just like that this character that we started with in season one has gained the respect of everyone she works with.
Yeah. I can't stop thinking about how Tom had sex in Anne's house. I really...
Wait, we're not there yet. Don't come to it too early.
All right. Jesus.
Oh, my God. You guys are making great puns, and my head is really in a sense of humor that only Tom would like this episode. At the same time, Leslie gathers the troops. I think the part of the episode, the moment of the episode that I have the most issue with is occurring. And I might dislike the Mark thing. And to be clear, I love this episode. So this is like nitpicking. But Ron is in the budget meeting and they get to Parks and Rec. And essentially, Ben tries to get Leslie fired. And I know it's key for plot. Like, I understand that, like, he has to try to get her fired so that Ron reveals what she's doing with the Freddy Spaghetti concert. And we also, I like seeing Ron be like, Leslie's essential. But there's a difference between, you know, what he'll be called hard ass or mean Ben, and watching him not just like bring up, should we fire her, but be like, we're firing her, moving on. Especially since we've seen them grab a beer. We know that he sees a lot of potential in her. Like, It kind of rubs me the wrong way.
It is sort of out of nowhere, isn't it? Like, I mean, I it makes sense, I guess, logistically and everything, but it does. It is just like, really? They did just literally have an episode where they like sort of connected towards the end.
They had an episode where they connected, and then Ben has been saying, like, she's come in like 14 times since the government shut down. Like, he is aware of how passionate she is. And it just, it makes the nice things he does. I don't know. It just, it doesn't really sit well with me. Will, what do you think?
I'm cool with it. Here's why. No, I that doesn't make sense to me. I think another read of it a little bit is him being like, this is just a job. I lost my job when I was 18. He knows that Leslie is capable and will like go on to do good things. Or also maybe he just doesn't care. And like at this,
well, he says earlier on, like, this town isn't special, which we know that will change.
Yeah.
And I thought about that too. I was like, maybe he's like, well, she's cool and great seeming, but, or I see potential in her, but we got to cut her. But to justify how much he like tries to be like, we're firing her, moving on. Like,
a thing that I like about the moment is it's like, part of what I think the show does is it feels like, okay, if we really pay attention to things and if we really pay attention to people, they'll like become interesting, even if we don't think they're interesting at first. Where it's like, if we really just focus on, you know, small local government, it will become interesting. And after it becomes interesting, we'll like actually maybe even start to love these characters. And I sort of like having a new character in Ben who hasn't, is maybe it's just starting to be interesting, but like most of his encounter with Leslie is like in a budget sheet that he's trying to balance. And he's like, you know, cost benefit analysis. And he's being really like logical and hasn't actually like, you know, they've had a beer, but he's not, for his job, he's not actually thinking of her as like a full, as like a
but
person
don't you
in
think
his
there's
life
a
yet?
Difference. Because I see all that, and I've counter-argued that in my head because I want it to feel better. But isn't there a difference between, like, what if he had brought her up and said, we should maybe fire her? But there was just something about how much he was like, no, we're moving on. Felt like it was all so that Ron would be like, no, you can't. Here's what's happening. Like, it's different between, like, bringing her up and being like, every department's losing a Leslie. Nope. I mean, I love the line of Ron's, no one had one to begin with. Like, I love getting to see Ron care about her. Alex, you said when we were watching, you took issue with why Ron wanted her to stay, though.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I sort of thought about was, like, I mean, and this probably just is Ron, like, you know, not wanting to be a guy who feels things, like, not, he wants to appear manly. But I was just saying, to your point, the reason that Ron gives that he wants Leslie to stick around is just so that he can continue to slack off during work and not do things.
See, and I guess I understand that feeling, but to me that didn't feel as bad because of what happened next. It's clear he just cares about her deeply,
right.
Which is it goes from one of my least favorite moments of Ben trying to get Leslie fired or saying that she should be, to one of my favorites, which is they're putting the concert up in the lot behind Anne's house. And Ron has to warn them that Ben and Chris are coming. So he runs in and does a terrific pratfall. But without Chris doing it, it's even funnier when Ron does a pratfall.
The Offerman
the
slip,
fault.
I think. Yeah. it's really, yeah. It's just.
He like slips and he's out of breath. It's just hilarious to watch him care this much.
It's the opposite side of the giddiness coin for me, too, where it's just him like frantic.
I wonder if that was scripted.
Just a fun choice that he made, you mean?
Yeah, I feel like.
All the falls were unscripted? Chris Pratt didn't mean to slip over the banister. The car wasn't meant to like hit him. What if all?
Well, that one would be pretty insane. But it does. You know, I could see a world because Nick Offerman is definitely a really smart comedic actor. So I could see a world where he was like, oh, I should, you should have me slip at the end of this.
Who knows? Who knows how these things are made?
I guess it seems unlikely since there's been two falls now.
Yeah, I do. I mean, at this point, I think I'm wanting there to be a moment where every character is falling, and we do get that moment in a later episode on ice, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Wait a minute. Also, earlier in this episode, we didn't touch on this. Doesn't oh my God, how am I'm like forgetting everyone's name.
Just physical descriptions. What do you see? Close your eyes. Walk us through it.
It'll be, oh, Leslie.
What does it smell like? Yeah.
Leslie goes to Tom Haverford's house while he's having sex.
Yes.
And his shirt's open. It's like such an uncomfortable moment.
It's a really horny episode. Multiple people get walked in on. I feel like when I was a kid watching TV, I was like, oh, right.
Multiple people. You walk I thought in it's all Tom. Time.
Oh, yeah. It's, but the only person different people that's... keep walking in on Tom. I guess.
And that's there's true. Also kissing all over the place.
Yeah.
Ugh. With, and not one cootie shot to be seen.
No, it's rampant.
Yeah, well, that's why I was saying the beginning of this episode, really, it just feels frantic without the Parks Department office to ground them.
Yeah.
It's like, why are they all... Yeah, Leslie tries to get everyone to help her, but Tom's like in the, about to have sex.
Yeah, but that doesn't.
For those he's still confused by this week's episode description.
Yeah, and then we feel in the middle of the, Leslie's doing it on her own. She's throwing this festival, and Anne has a very brilliant idea in the empty lot behind her house. She's doing most of it by herself with the help of a few scrappy friends. She spills the beans to Ron, and then we get more bean spilling with April and Andy.
That's right. So Andy gets hit by a car.
Wait. Oh. Whoa.
Pre-hit even.
We got a pre-hit. April. Andy keeps asking April. Like Andy doesn't know why April's upset. This is coming off her birthday where. April witnessed Andy witnessing Anne taking off her sweater seductively in front of him. So she's still upset about her 21st birthday.
Right.
Yeah. And we have a really sweet moment, though, where Andy, apologizes and he says that he likes her. But it's not going to... We get still that little... That grain of unrequited love is going to turn into a pearl. I don't know if that's totally true.
But I like that they finally communicate. They finally communicate, which is great. You know, like Andy uses reverse psychiatry on her and gets her to talk to him. And they both finally speak aloud that they like each other. And April admits that she thinks that Andy still has feelings for Anne. Which feels weird if you started your rewatch last episode, but we've been watching since season one, and because we have, it feels really grounded. Like, he was obsessed with Anne for most of season one and two.
Right. Yeah.
Season one and a half, I'd say.
It is interesting because I actually only started a couple episodes back, and to me, Right. And to me, watching this, it does feel like, he's not into her. Even when, spoiler alert, when they do share that kiss, Andy and Anne, it doesn't feel...
This is the thing. No one when in their rewatches starts on season one, but when you do, Andy is in love and obsessed with Anne, and everything he does, getting jobs, everything is to win Anne back for all of season one and the beginning of season two. And so for us, I feel like it... And April's witnessed this. So I feel like it is grounded in a realistic fear and hesitation for someone who doesn't like being vulnerable.
That's fair. But I mean, to his credit, I thought they did a good job of, making it so you see how she...
Over him.
Well, you see on both sides. You can understand both sides where she's afraid of it. But also you as the viewer, I think, no, Andy is into April.
I mean, even the way... See, we keep spoiling like a couple scenes in the future, so we'll just get there. Freddy Spaghetti, when they originally canceled on him, took another gig in Eagleton at a library. It's a 1-2 punch. So Leslie wants basically Andy to play a kid's show, which is going to be hard because most of his songs are as dirty as Lou Burger's songs. But 6. He agrees 5, to do it. Yeah. He takes his motorcycle, is driving to go get his guitar, and gets hit by a car, ends up in the hospital. And this is where the center of the Andy, April, and love triangle really comes to head, because Anne visits him and Chris Pratt really plays this. I feel like Chris Pratt and Rashida Jones really play this well, because Rashida Jones has said all episode, I just broke up with Mark. I'm in a bad place. I shouldn't be dating. She's setting us up to think like her and Chris are going to do something wrong, but she's really made it clear, like, she is reminiscing, she's making poor decisions. And Andy really clearly, I feel like every line he says, it's clear that he is thinking in the past about them. Like, she says something like, my week's been, you know, shit too. And he's like, oh, sorry. But like, clearly it's, you know, past. And they both meet at this moment in his bed where she kisses him.
His hospital bed. Feels important. Yeah.
Yeah. Ironically, the only person not getting any action at Anne's house is Anne.
I would watch like a director's cut that's just you narrating, Alex. You know, it's just kind of like an Arrested Development. You know, they weren't.
He didn't. But this is what I'm talking about. When she gives him that kiss, the face that Chris Pratt makes to me says, like, oh. This is like, and even with the background that you're sort of talking about, it's like, oh, this is what I've wanted. I'm getting it, but I don't want it.
Yeah.
No, he's more just like, oh, it's you again. And I feel like both of them are playing like they're not into each other. She's making bad breakup decisions, which she's foreshadowed. He's just been hit by a car. And this, you know,
what we
and
can
then,
only imagine
so she,
isn't the first time. I feel like this isn't his first car,
no,
but it was
not.
A bad hit.
So she leaves, and then April comes in, feels bad for having doubted his love, and she kisses him. And we see the very clear difference, too, I feel like, between the two kisses of a couple, you know, remembering their past relationship versus a couple, you know, really two people really in love with each other. But then this is where I think he's a puppy dog. He has to be honest immediately that Anne and him had just kissed.
That's tough. I don't know what... It's like, what do you do in that situation?
Will, you've been in this situation. What did you do?
I think I also ruined it immediately in that moment. I think I immediately broke that.
Is this real? You had a similar situation to this?
Oh, identical. He had his motorcycle, got hit by a car... His ex-lover was there, his current lover.
It wasn't fair what we did to you, Alex.
It's not unthinkable that something similar could have happened to Will.
I do think what is so good about this moment is the thing we just described, where it's like the audience, we the audience, see both, and we know that he's telling the truth, but we also 1,000%, like, it's just good writing where it's like putting the best and the worst thing right next to each other, where it's like April's dream and April's nightmare happen within 5 seconds of each other. And it's just like so painful and like the perfect way to end the season, I think, where we get like just a taste of what we want. Yeah. Ugh, so good.
Yeah. I think too, we've talked about how April has a lot of trouble being vulnerable. So for her, her worst nightmare is she presents her deepest desire, which is to kiss him, and then immediately finds out something like he just kissed Anne.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah. Oof.
It's a tough moment. And I wonder if these two kids will ever work it out.
Yeah, there's no way to know at this moment. So onwards to the end of the episode.
Upwards to Freddy Spaghetti and the big dilemma.
Deus Ex Pasta. I'll say that wasn't a pun attempt as much as me speaking Greek badly, I think.
All the world's a stage.
I was trying to, in rewatching this episode this time, I was trying to come up with, like, could I make a better pasta song than Freddy Spaghetti? And the closest thing I could come up with was a Leonard Cohen Hallelujah song, but the words are hot lasagna, which I feel like could be kind of like beautiful, you know? And imagine all the kids singing along to that.
Oh my God.
If I have some time, I'll try to make a demo. Yeah. And it's just like tears streaming down our face. Okay. Oh, wow. Shrek 2. What a good soundtrack. So we come back after double kisses. Woof, woof, woof. Leslie is trying to shoulder the responsibility. You know, her team is coming together, but it's up to her to save the day. She comes on as Ramona Ricotta. Pretty good. Pretty good in a pinch, I think. Because
she said Freddie Spaghetti bumped his noodle, which gets a big laugh from the crowd.
Yeah. And why wouldn't it?
A well-deserved laugh.
She tries to bring back Ron's sauce joke, but goes too aggressive.
Who hasn't been there halfway through a joke and realized this isn't my audience?
Too much.
She gave it just a little too much sauce.
Oh, yes. Yes, Alex. Yes. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm sorry. I'm being a little too cheesy.
Oh, good. Good.
Listen, we brought you on to have a penne for your thoughts, and you're bringing it right now.
Oh, my goodness. Tortellini.
It's good to be here.
Oh, man.
I feel safe. I feel like a safe space for this kind of stuff. But just in time, who should appear?
Hasta la vista, baby. Let's just do this thing up. I hated myself for that. But just in time, what happens, Will?
Oh, you know, Freddie Spaghetti shows up. He shows right. Oh. He shows right up to the concert, just like he promised, because of money. Money saved the day. Ugh,
doesn't it always?
Not just any money. It was Ben's money, belonging to the government.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's right. What, so it was Ben's personal money, right?
Yeah, I think he put it on credit. Maybe he gets points, so it actually wasn't a selfless thing, because he's also going to like redeem them for air travel.
Well, so this is it's a sweet I really moment. Like Ben helps, as Leslie says, build something instead of making a budget cut. But again, I just kind of wish. I feel like the listeners are going to side with you, Will. I feel like people are going to agree with you that it's okay that he, you know, pushed to get her fired right before. I don't think people are going to agree with me. I wish from my heart.
I hear
you, it had been a little less aggressive.
I hear you being like, it's really like, it's not just that he brings it up. I totally hear all that. I think for me, it's a little bit like, this is for Ben and Leslie. This is the version of like, Andy and April's kiss and Andy and Anne's kiss, where it's like the best thing and the worst thing next to each other, but it's in the reverse order. Where it's like Ben is like on one side of, you know, the spectrum. And then we see him after observing Leslie decide to like.
And I'm all for Ben being a hard ass when he first enters the show. Like, I enjoy that he gets to feel the effect of Leslie Knope, like every character. I guess it's just, it's a difficult pill to swallow. But I do love that he saves the day. And I love that this is. Leslie and Ben teaming up really for the first time to do some good, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And the concert friggin' rocks. Penny and the Jets.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it rocks hard.
Penny and the Jets was a really solid.
Yeah. It's Raining Raw Men was the only one that I was.
And now what you guys keep bringing up, Lucy and Tom bang in Anne's apartment.
Oh, yes. The banging.
Or Anne's house.
Okay.
Which is also the bathroom. They also make the joke that Anne's house is where everyone's going to go to the bathroom. And Chris walks in on them in Anne's house. And I was just really, I also couldn't reconcile that kids could have walked into Anne's house while they were having sex.
I really also, yes, that's obviously the worst part. But I just, how rude could you possibly be to go have sex in your friend's house?
Yeah.
That's so rude.
There are a few moments, because there's also, like, Chris comes off as a little just psychotic. Like, him being chipper after that is a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and then he goes and gets rejected. He gets rejected.
Yeah, well, Chris goes in to ask Anne out again, whistling, and then sees them having sex and leaves whistling. That's what Will you're talking about. Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I love this episode. I guess I just, it does sometimes feel like if the master plan the episode before this was the brilliant dessert that got brought to us finally, this is sort of like the chaotic, everyone's digging into dessert and we're learning how to, we're sort of figuring out the new dynamic. And I feel like there's a little bit of growing pains as we figure out at the end of this season how to incorporate two new characters into the mix.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of growing pains, the whole season ends with a really sweet little moment between Lucy and Tom. And then we see Ron enter in his Tiger Woods red polo to reveal,
oh my gosh,
that he started sleeping with Tom's ex-wife, Wendy.
It's such a dramatic season button. But before we hit the button, we also have Leslie, who's been non-essential this whole time, and it said it so on her ID, Ron appoints her to the budget meeting, and she's now essential. So it's her and Ben, they're gonna square off in this budget meeting. And we spent so much time talking about
and a great haircut.
The announcement of Mark leaving.
Just in case we skip right over it. She's got a great haircut.
Who has? Oh, yeah, a really nice updo.
Yeah.
An updo, yeah.
Thank you, sorry.
She's really refreshed. Yeah. But maybe she's refreshed because we also get the final goodbye scene of Mark and Leslie.
Mm.
We had him telling her he's leaving. And now I guess she must have texted him, meet me in the pit or the lot.
The pit for old
but
time's
we
sake.
Have
yeah.
them, we have them sitting on this bench in front of the lot. He hands her plans for a future park, like what the design might be. And she hands him red tape. So that he'll always remember his roots. It felt a little bit like the canoe scene between Mark and Ron. It felt like, am I supposed to, do I remember? I know he talked about red tape, but like, it was like, it was goodbye to Mark Brandanowitz. We have them sitting there.
Right.
And I don't know. There's just some of these lines. I like the sweet kiss on the cheek. You know, we've seen them. I guess there's just some of these lines don't, Mark has really, I almost wish he had come back.
Yeah.
At least for a scene in the future. As sort of a, yeah, almost like I wish Mark could come back for one scene and be a more realized character again. Because, you know, he started off as this playboy who like gave looks into the camera. Then he started dating Anne and became this sort of like awkward fumbling. I don't know what to do in a relationship. And then that relationship petered off, and as it did, so did he. I mean, I know we talked about it for a while, but this is his goodbye.
Yeah.
His bandana exit.
Leslie said it best. He's Mark Brandana quit. As I said, Leslie said it best.
She did say it best. Yeah, she really nailed it. Yeah, I wish we could... We got to have him on the show. I wish I could say goodbye to Mark myself. I mentioned this at the beginning, but it's like, I think I'm a softy and I like shows that like aim to have a heartfelt moment and risk having them fall flat. And I think one of the reasons I like Parks and Rec is because it like shoots for moments like this. And so often hits a bullseye, and this this was like on the target, but wasn't that for me? But it's also just like, well, that's, you know, that's great. Like nothing is perfect. This isn't a perfect moment.
No,
but I love.
No, and it's not.
Yeah, I love that it's a show that like tried. It like tried its best with Mark, and I think that's what I like.
I am. It's not a critique of the show. I guess it's because I love the show so much, and they have sentimental moments. Even when they don't try, like when Ben and Leslie do the concert together and Ben looks at Leslie and Leslie said, we built something today. That hit for me. And that's such a smaller moment. You know, I feel like the tiny moments have meaning. So to have this like exchange of gifts.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, they tried. They gave him a goodbye. Alex, did you cry? You were kind of weeping a little bit.
I was
while watching.
Sobbing. Yeah. I couldn't hold back the emotions as I saw the end of Mark Brandanowicz. The possible only Jew on the show. I'm guessing from the last name, Brandanowicz.
Oh my God, I didn't even think. I wish they had explored his Jewish heritage. I probably would have. Doug, before we hit our town halls and hear from some of the listeners, do we have any final, I mean, we kind of just like talked about all our feelings as we watch. Any final thoughts on the episode as a whole? Freddy Spaghetti. We have our musical comedy expert here. Were you happy they ended with a musical comedian?
I felt very represented by this episode. Yeah, it was nice. You know, do we ever see Freddy Spaghetti return?
We do.
Oh, well, I'll be looking out for him because I have to rewatch the show now that and I have to get to the end.
Yeah.
You know, now that I'm going to do this, I just my Parks and Rec.
Freddy Spaghetti and Leslie have a really intense love affair in season 7.
That can't be true.
You haven't gotten there. How would you know? You really going to doubt me on this?
Well, I know that she ends up dating Ben Wyatt, and I just don't think that they would replace Ben Wyatt for Freddy Spaghetti.
Season 7 gets crazy.
Okay.
Well, she does. I mean, you could call it. She has one passionate night. She does have his children in season 7.
This can't
it's a
be
whole
true.
Thing.
I don't believe you. I am not falling for this.
We burned too many bridges. You've been lied to by us before. I understand where you're coming from.
It's just, I don't believe it. But yeah.
How do you, Will, we're done with season 2. How do you feel moving on to season 3? I know season 1 felt like really short.
I feel, you know, I've heard of the rewatch. You should go season 2 to season 4, back to season 3, finish with season 7, then do 5, 6. I'm proud of us for making it this far, you know. 4 times the episode of season 1 feels like an accomplishment. And yeah, I think, I mean, it's been a wild ride, and I like what we're set up for in season 3. Like, they made a nice little mess, you know. And it's going to be exciting to see how they clean it up or get even dirtier.
Let's get to our voicemails. If you want to reach us, go to speakpipe.com/PawneePublicRadio. Tweet at us at Radio Pawnee. Email us townhall@PawneePublicRadio.com. And leave us a 5-star review on all the places where podcasts are found. Our first voicemail is number 157. Alex, we have multiple Connors call in, and this is Connor Young from the Connor Club.
Hey, Hannah, Will, and Alex. This is Connor Young calling in from Norman, Oklahoma. This week, I'm back with another what-if question. So instead of there being a budget crisis and having to shut the city down, let's pretend that there was no budget crisis. I want you to be as a writer on this show and try to, like, pitch your idea of what this season 2 finale episode should be. What plot line should we follow? Where should it take us? I just wanted to, like, experiment. So what if there was no budget crisis? Thank you.
Thank you, Connor, for calling in with a what-if question. We like our what-if questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And
no budget
we're going to come
crisis.
Out of this what-if question with a full episode of television. A fully realized spec script, which...
Should we go full in the other direction? There's a budget surplus.
Too much money.
Suddenly Parks and Recreation.
Very treasure.
Too much money.
What are we going to do?
What happens?
Well, if there's too much money, they'd probably put on a full music festival for children. So we're talking Freddy Spaghetti. We're talking Melanie Melonhead. We're talking Apple Applebaum. I don't know why I'm going to fruit.
No, commit.
Okay.
Banana... Hannah
Banana, come on.
Yeah. Tom Bomb, a musical guest who explodes at the end of every song. You know.
Love it.
A song is never longer than his fuse.
This is what we're seeing, I think. It would also be, yeah, maybe there's also, if you get rid of the budget crisis, maybe you'd probably feature Mark Brandanowicz a little more, right?
Yeah, I think... I like where your head's at. I like the idea of we still send off Mark Brandanowicz big. There's a budget surplus, which means that Ben and Chris are just like trying to figure out what to do with all this money we have. and Mark.
They're brought in to figure out.
They're brought in to like, what to do with all this money. And then Mark maybe has like, you know, some huge fall from grace with his like all of his architect, his little architect projects, you know?
I like it.
I want to see him ruined. Just destitute
Will,
of
no him. Longer a softy in this what if.
No.
Connor, thank you so much for calling in. We hope you enjoy the budget surplus. Skip voicemail number 158. It's just me saying testing, testing into a microphone.
Which you just did again.
And let's go. Yeah. Let's go to number 160. Wow, why is it skipping by two now? I don't know. Anonymous, number 160.
Hey, Hannah and Will. Sports guy dad here. I'll try to be brief. I liked your analysis of the two league championship games. Both of you picked the Bills and the Packers. And you probably don't even realize, but both of your teams lost. And Will somehow doesn't like the Packers because he likes Broncos. Not sure Broncos and Packers are a known rivalry, but Will, you guys know more than me. That's why I call into your show. Freddy Spaghetti and a government shutdown. That said, so now the team you couldn't remember, Hannah, shockingly, is Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers are playing against the Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. So it's now the Chiefs and the Buccaneers. Pirates and Chiefs are going to lose their name because they're Indian, so... If you're in the political correct, you'll go with the Pirates, I guess, the Buccaneers. But let me know, and hopefully the government will open up so Leslie will have something to do. Ciao.
Ciao, Dad. This is Sports Guy Dad. This is my dad. Alex looked very confused about the turn the podcast had taken. I'm going to say, first of all, Alex's face was just like, what? What is happening? This is my father. He is going to soon have his own spinoff podcast, Sports Guy's Dad. I'm going to say you never bet against Tom Brady in Super Bowls. From my personal experience, I know he's an older gentleman now, but Giselle keeps him young. So I'll go with Brady and Tampa. Are you taking the other team, Will?
No, I'm going to go with the Bills again. I feel like I got totally, you know... criticized for picking a losing team, but I'm not just going to give up on them because they lost one game. I think they
don't
still
give
have
up.
I think they still have
yeah,
a shot.
Don't give up. Just because they're not in it, don't give up. Dad, thanks for calling in. Alex, thank you for your face during that
You're
whole
welcome.
Voicemail.
I gotta tell you, I really thought that was just a random person calling in for some podcast voice time.
I love you, Dad, and so does Alex. Now we're moving on to my mother, Alex, number 162. They both call in anonymous. I just want to warn you now.
Hi, Hannah. Hi, Will, and hi, Alex. What a great episode to have a guest podcaster. Really liked this episode because I liked that Ron made it clear to everyone that Leslie Knope is the Parks and Rec department. I like that Ben showed us a glimmer of good things to come when he paid for Freddy Spaghetti to entertain the kids. And I like that we were able to send Mark Brandanowicz off on a high note. And I like the symmetry of Leslie and Mark sitting on that bench. But I guess what I noticed the most in this episode were the tags that the employees wore, which were essential or non-essential workers. And in this age of coronavirus vaccination prioritization, it just seems that we're always talking about who is essential and who is non-essential. So I'm curious to hear who you think is essential and non-essential to the show. Anyway, this was a great finale. It was like a double chocolate fudge brownie.
Thanks, Mom!
I'm so glad your mom added to the show. I really thought it was going to be a big question of like, who do you think is essential?
Like, in life.
Everybody? Oh my God. I think everybody.
Yeah, let's answer her question. I will say, Leslie Knope, at the end of the episode, does get vaccinated because she's now an essential government employee. So who is essential to the show?
I mean, obviously Leslie Knope.
Oh man, Alex, that's the family member at Thanksgiving who's like, and I'm thankful for my family. The person who goes first and gets to just claim the easy one.
All right. I'll proud of you. By the way, I just before we move on and answer this, I do want to give a shout out to Hannah's mom, who I fondly remember for calling me handsome once after I edited a video for Hannah and she saw. So hello, Hannah's mom.
Easy. Not on our podcast.
Stop flirting with my mom and answer the question.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I mean, I think John Ralphio is an essential worker, honestly, because without John Ralphio, you know, we're just going to have Tom Haverford going way too crazy. We need a little John Ralphio.
I feel like John Ralphio heightens his crazy.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I don't know. On some level, I feel like Tom Haverford, like, well, no, here's what it is. When he's with John Ralphio, he's able to let all of his, you know, hyper ridiculousness out. Without John Ralphio, he's just a pent up ball of, I need to be a
crazy
person.
You're right. I understand now. So your answer is John Ralphio.
Mm.
Will's answer is,
I'll go Andy. And not for the reason you might think, but because he, without a shoe shine, people are just scuffing around that office, you know? And I think people's spirits would be lower. I think they would have less self-confidence. I think they would be harder on themselves because their shoes looked worn. So I think Andy really brings a shine and is essential. I also feel like maybe Hannah, we answered it last episode when we, that like targeted ad. I feel like all of those little like bobblehead figurines are essential.
I also think, you know, someone who does the thankless thing is Jerry Terry Larry. He's always there doing paperwork. He shows up. Thank goodness for Jerry Gergich.
Yeah.
But also April. I really love April. He shows up after.
Thank goodness for April.
I think we can all agree Leslie is the family answer.
Yeah, I'm thankful
for Leslie. John Ralphio. Yeah, thankful for Leslie. And thankful for my mom.
Who isn't?
And dad. Yeah, who isn't? All right. I love you. And I also love, but less than my mom. I'm sorry. That was a weird transition. Next voicemail.
Is it your brother?
We have Joy the Librarian, number 163.
Hi, it's Joy the Librarian. I've missed both of you so much. What would your children's entertaining name be? I think I might be Jamboree Joy. Let me know.
I gotta be Hannah Banana, right?
Yeah.
That's the obvious thing.
How do you entertain the kids? Is like, are bananas involved at all in your act?
Definitely.
Lots of slipping?
lots of pratfalls.
I would... The first rhyming word that got stuck in my little brain was Will Pill, and I do one big show. I go out big.
Oh, wow.
No.
That's very funny.
Okay. I'll stick with it, and I'll never work in children's entertainment again.
Yay. Alex, what is the children's version of Lou Burger?
Oh, we do the Lou Burger Kids version. I guess
Andy becomes Johnny Karate. What does Lou Burger become?
Okay, all right. I guess we'd probably be like Lou Burger, but with a U, and because right now it's Lewberger. It would be Lou Burger, and it would probably be Lou space Burger, and we'd be, you know, the Burger Boys. And we'd come out and the only thing we'd sing about is, you know, we'd change all of our songs. Instead of I wish I could be a Disney princess, it would be I wish I could be a cheeseburger princess, or you know, I wish, or sausage is or a hamburger is a roasted dick.
So two of the three of us will not be working in children's entertainment. Joy, thank you for calling in. Our last town hall this week is an email. So thank you so much to Lucy Van Pelt for emailing in. It's a
from the peanuts?
Four-part email. I guess I'll read part. We'll just switch off each email that you followed up on. Thank you so much. This feels like Jennifer last time with her four-part thing. So Lucy Van Pelt, the title of her email is Fan Letter Plus Would You Rather Questions. So Alex, we'll be reading the emails. Your job is to really remember it. Take notes if you have to.
Okay.
Hey, guys, I'm Lucy from Seattle. I've been to Donna's apartment. It's not that great. Wow. Starting off with some fighting words. Seattle's just rain and apples. That rhymed. Did it rhyme? Seattle's just rain and apples.
It would have to be Seattle's just rain and atolls or something.
I'm going to say it again. Seattle's just rain and atolls. That rhymed. So the story behind this email is that I tried to promise myself not to send emails until I fully caught up with all your episodes. But I have no self-restraint, and after five episodes, I'm desperate to send you something. Well, we're so glad you did. You know what? I'll stop commenting. There's enough to get through. I became jealous of the three plus Connors. Whenever I find a podcast I really like, I bombard them with millions of emails until they're sick of me. So you're in for a treat. I thought it would be fun if I sent you some would you rathers. All right. Get your pen ready, Alex. One. If you had to be stuck in quarantine with any of these people, would you rather be stuck with A, Jean Ralphio, B, Craig, C, Darren. I think that's his name, but you know April's weird friend, Oren. Number two, if for some reason Andy and April could never be together, would you rather Andy be with A, Gary, Jerry, Larry, Terry, B, Tom, C, Mona Lisa? Three, same question, but with April, A, Anne, B, Leslie's mom, Marlene, for those who forget. C, Gary, Jerry, Larry, Terry. I can't help myself. Oh, I have a funny thing about that one.
okay.
No commentary. Four, number four. Oh, yeah, really put your expectations high. Four, this isn't a would you rather question. It's more of a what if question. So Ben made Cones of Dunshire. What board games would everyone else make? Number five. Oh, spoilers in this email. It wasn't clear. Number five. If you had to pick any of these characters to babysit when they were kids, so they're kids now, would it be A, Leslie, B, April, C, Jean Ralphio, and Mona Lisa? This concludes my various questions. I hope you liked reading my email. Your podcast is so great. It's like the Parks and Rec version of The Office Ladies meets Michael Scott Podcast Company. Both great podcasts. Keep up the great work. Heart emoji, Anne Filippelli. Oh yeah, and I'm the future. I will sign all my emails with a joke. You'll never get sick of it ever. Thank you so much. Email two, the follow up. Will,
should we? You think we plow right through? And people,
I think we switch off.
People play along at home. Answer your questions.
Yeah, we'll go for all four, and then we'll answer. Yeah.
Oh wow! Thank you for emailing, Lucy. Oh, also, I forgot to mention, but I'm super into improv too, Hannah. What's your favorite improv game? I really like doing long-form freeze tags.
Email three. And another quick thing. In the first email, I made a typo, and you can't edit emails. It's supposed to say, in the future, not right. I'm the future.
That's a good reveal.
That's a good reveal, yeah. Email four. Will?
And yet another quick thing. These things will get slightly less quick as time goes on, but you'll get used to it. I would like to know if I could be an honorary member of the Connor Club because my last name is Connor. Yes, you're in. You're accepted. My email says Lucy Van Pelt because my dad set it up ages ago, and you know it's the Peanuts character, and I don't know how to change it, so I'm stuck. And final parentheses, and sadly, my first name is not also Connor. Otherwise, I'd be the strongest Connor of all the Connors. Lucy, thank you for all of your emails. Thank you for listening to the show.
Thank you for all your emails. We can't wait to have you keep emailing in. We'll work backwards because we started to. You are officially a part of the Connor Club. Welcome to the Connor Club. Welcome, sound effects. Wow, what a welcoming sound effect. The typo, very funny. What is your favorite improv game? Will and Alex have also done improv, so I guess we'll all answer this one. And I hope the listeners are enjoying this working backwards stuff. Favorite improv game? I think mine would be Zip Zap Zop. I'm going to go classic because I'm very competitive and I never lose that game. Even when I'm teaching a class of kids, I don't let them win. They said to me, Hannah, we're going to beat you. And I said, no, you're not. And then I crushed those middle schoolers at Zip Zap Zop. Improv game, boys?
I love a good old fashioned friggin' scenes from a dang hat. From whose line is it anyway? Or if not that, I love New Choice. That is an example of that game.
That was an example of that game. If we're talking warm-up games, I like Contact. If we're talking just regular short-form games, I like Party Court.
Number five, which would you babysit? Oh, they'd all be a handful to babysit, but I'm going to go with Leslie. I feel like she would send you notes throughout the rest of your life.
I feel like April would be super easy to babysit. She'd just be quiet.
No, she would. I feel like she would. I don't know. I think she could be a handful.
Maybe we've got Leslie,
April.
Okay. I'll do John, Ralphie, and Mona Lisa so that all these kids are taken care of. It sounds like we can each take a different...
No one is left.
No one's left alone.
Okay. Instead of what board games would each other character make, how about just one character, what board game would they make?
How about the characters that were babysitting? Let's make up their board game.
Yeah.
Great. I love it.
I feel like John, Ralphio, and Mona Lisa, the board game would be called Knives and Glue. And the way that you play the game is one person has a big bucket of glue and the other person has a big bucket of knives. And then the babysitter tries to make it until the parents get home. Kind of like a Purge situation, but it comes in a really fun like packaging. Like the game is really well designed. The glue is like really beautiful and the knives are sharp.
Leslie's game is a Super Mario Brothers-esque game, except it's all with historical women. So instead of a video game, it's all famous women throughout history on popsicle sticks that she's made herself battling it out in a three-part debate. And when you, the babysitter, know less than her, she makes sure to break everything down for you. It's called Super Mario Historical Women.
and I think April would design a game called Procrastination, where it's your job, or the object of the game is to get other players to do work for you, and the more work other people do for you, the more points you get.
I love it. I'm just gonna say the answer to number three has already been answered, that April or Aubrey Plaza actually made out with Jerry, Terry, Larry at one of their final interviews while they sang 5,000 Candles in the Wind. That clip is on YouTube. So we can, that is not a what if, but that exists. So number two, if Andy, who would he be with? I think Tim and Tom would be cute.
Andy and Tom? Yeah.
I'm going to say Tom because I don't know who the other characters are.
And that's love. Sometimes that's love, you know? Sometimes that's
what the Michael Bublé.
That's how it all happens.
I think we all agree on Tom. Number one, if you were stuck in quarantine with any of these people, who would you be stuck with?
Oh. I would, yeah, we haven't met him yet, but I think Craig really means well. Yeah.
Means well. I'm going to go with Oren. I'm just going to let him sort of hide in a corner and never leave the house.
The obvious answer is John Ralphio because he's going to keep it fresh every day for you, you know?
Yeah, I guess that also means that none of the three of us will be in each other's pods. But that, you know, that we'll all be with a different fictional character.
That's all right. Lucy Van Pelt, or Lucy Connor, rather, thank you so much for emailing in. And welcome to the Connor Club. The last thing, don't worry, the last thing. We're only going to be reading one 5-star review. We always have our guest read it.
Sounds good. Jen13729 said, awesome, awesome. Love listening. The hosts are so great. And that's 5 stars from December 16th, 2020.
Woo! Thank you, Jen13729. And thank you. Please leave us some 5-star reviews if you have a moment, because it really helps us get the word out about the podcast. Wowie. I feel like I just went to an entire rock concert of Freddy Spaghetti.
Don't you mean...
noodle concert? That's the worst one.
Well, look, I mean, I had a meatball.
It's just a gift that keeps on giving. Freddy Spaghetti did this for us. Something diddleini. No joke. I just love those little tiny pastas. They crack me up. They're perfect for bracelets if you want to do crafts. Oh my gosh.
A nice chilled soup with diddleini. I don't think this one's going to breadstick.
Thank you. Thank you. In my dream end of this episode, it's just people like muttering, trying to find puns. As it like slow, like a fade that lasts for like 45 minutes. Just like you listen for 30 minutes and you're like, oh, it has gotten a little bit quieter. And then you're
like, wow, I really pasta the timed with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too.
Sorry. Well,
Hannah, I'm really glad that your Mamma Mia called in.
And her Papa Pia. Yeah. Good her point, Alex.
Stuff a Joel.
Honestly, Alex, it's so great. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm now Googling. I'm now getting insecure and I'm Googling pasta puns. And
oh yeah, pull
some
it up.
Of them don't fit. Sorry, this gift is pasta due. The possibilities are endless.
That's a
Think
good one.
About the dish is so good it's pre-pasta roast.
No, guys, it's good to just get together and...
She said she pasta away.
Oh, God,
please don't use that if someone dies.
No, it's good that... It's nice that the three of us got together and just noodled around a little bit, you know?
If you want more of stuff like that, check out Lou Burger Live at Lincoln Hall, available February 9th and beyond forever until the internet goes away.
Spaghetti the hype. They're just as good as you've heard. No, I'm feeling a little saucy now that we're getting to the end. See, Googling really helps. thank you for coming on. No, really, it's fun. What a journey our friendship has taken from. I first saw Alex. He had a YouTube video of a song parody years before we ever met. And then I met him and I was like, that's the guy I saw on the YouTube.
And then I had the exact same experience once I saw
Dealer
Anna
No Deal.
You say that you were on Deal or No Deal?
We call it Deal or No Deal on this podcast.
Why?
Why does anyone do
That's
anything,
a good question.
Really?
One harmless lie.
Andy auditioned for Survivor and Deal or No Deal, and he breaks open a coconut and goes, that's why I'll be, or he has a machete and goes, that's why you should put me on Deal or No Deal. So forever since that episode, we've called it Deal or No Deal.
That's very fun.
But from you now, I do understand why that would be kind of confusing.
Confusing.
Speaking of which, this is an RHAP joint, right? This is a Rob Sesternino joint.
It's an RHAP umbrella.
Well,
joint.
Give my best. He has no idea who I am, but I love Rob Sesternino.
He's pretty great.
Cool.
We want to thank the listeners for pressing the download button. Please subscribe. We are pumped to get into season 3. It's just around the river bend.
Oh my God. She's losing it.
Just around the river tortellini.
Oh no, she's spiraling.
This is why at the end of TV shows, they take a little hiatus, you know? You gotta take a break. You can't just go right into the next season. You gotta have a break.
She's spiraling like Fusilli.
If our listeners should hashtag one thing to let us know they listen, what should they hashtag at Radio Pawnee? What is the hashtag of this podcast episode?
Hashtag spaghetti.
Spaghetti. Spaghetti. Thank you so much, Alex. Thank you. And thank the listener. And thank you, Will. And we got to get out of here. I've lost my knees.
Good night, everybody. Bye.
Goodbye. Good night. I love you.